It's a great pleasure to be here. So today I'm going to talk about topological inflation and anti-Dibre annihilation. And basically, I will end talking about a stringy graceful exit mechanism. So another way to think of this physically is inflation from a bang. See, your brain's banging. So apologies to the, a lot of people in the community who have done lots of work building up the technology so that, a person like me can come and put some things together, make a nice recipe for how one can imagine inflation happening in a non-perturbative way in the context of string theory. And I just want to bring attention, though, to a paper I wrote in 2001. And then some follow-up work I did with Robert Brandenburg and Moshe Razali. So let's begin. So the first thing I'm going to do is start off by the sort of introduction and motivation, basically discussing why scalar field-driven inflation fails in the context of general relativity and quantum field theory, and why string theory could help in that context. Then I'm going to review the other incarnations of how people think about inflation in the context of D-brains, meaning the slower roll versions. Then I'm going to talk about this other way of thinking about inflation, topological inflation. And pretty much the rest is sort of building that type of mechanism up. And being very clear about the assumptions so that, we can all think about future work to do in this context. And I'm going to talk about how some of these issues could be resolved, such as the initial condition and how moduli stabilization can be addressed in this context. And then I'm going to conclude with a discussion. Okay, so let's begin. Oh, sorry, Clifford. Okay, tell me not to worry. Okay, so the first thing, warn you about that. Scalar field-driven inflation models are singular, geodesically incomplete as you go back to square minus. That's the first thing. The fluctuation problem, meaning delta rho over rho, of scalar perturbation and inflation being 10 to the minus 5 requires that the self-coupling of the scalar field has to be about 10 to the minus 14. And a more serious problem, technical problem, is the Trans-Planckian problem, which is again related to the initial fluctuations for large-scale structure. And the statement is that if you look in the context of inflation, so this line, this represents physical distance, and this represents time. And this line represents the Hubble radius. The Hubble radius is constant during inflation. And basically, if you look at scales today in physical, if you look at a perturbation in physical coordinates on scales comparable to large-scale structure. Oh, that's even better. Thanks. Thank you. And you evolve it back to where it originated as quantum fluctuations. What you typically find for, and especially in realistic inflationary models such as chaotic inflation, where you have a large amount of e-foldings, like to the order of thousands of e-folding, you can calculate this and find that this these fluctuations are generated during the Planckian epoch, deep into the Planck, like 10 to the 60th. Something times L Planck, 10 to the minus 60th. Okay, so you get numbers in that order. So that's inconsistent with the original assumption that these fluctuations are perturbative and have to do with weak self-coupling. So you have an internal inconsistency in scalar field-driven inflation. So some of my colleagues see this as an opportunity for string theory, for instance, okay? And I see it the same way. And the lesson, basically, is that inflation, while as a scenario, provides an economical framework to predict the features of the CMB and resolve the problems of standard Big Bang. It lacks a concrete realization in a fundamental theory of quantum gravity, such as string theory. And basically, the end point is that quantum weakly coupled quantum field theory to gravity is not enough. We need to go beyond that, and D-brains can help. And the main reason why D-brain can help, first of all, it gives us a geometrical picture for how to imagine what inflation would look like, because the dynamics of D-brains encode field theories. Okay, and another thing is that the D-brains also have massless world volume fields, and they can be good candidates for inflatons. The other point is that the massless open string modes decouple from closed string modes, and D-brains can be very heavy without a huge back reaction to gravity. So you basically have another scale in the problem, which is the tension of the D-brain. And this may give insight into the Trans-Planckian problem, because D-brains probe scales smaller than M. Planck. So basically, if you have a consistent description of inflation coming from D-brains, you can basically trace the fluctuation history back to the Planck scale. So a quick review of that. If I have basically a five-brain, basically the statement is that the world volume field living on a five-brain, the transverse fluctuations correspond to scalar fields on the world volume, and the longitudinal fluctuations correspond to gauge fields, charged gauge fields of open strings that end on it. Okay, so a little, the origin of these species. Okay, I'm going to go through the natural selection of D-brain inflation. So I'm going to show the case that failed, which is slow D-brain inflation. Okay, slow D-brain inflation is realized from a Coulombic potential, which depends on the separation between two D-brains. Now, this can be calculated directly from the Born-Infeld action or by a cylinder diagram that Joe taught us. And so here's my little picture here. Okay, so here's a D-brain, here's an anti-D-brain. And this is a modulus corresponding to the distance between these two D-brains. And that is encoded. So I directly just threw out the Born-Infeld action, and I replace it by its pullback into the embedding space, which is ADS5 cross S5 in this case, because it's going to be relevant. And basically, if I assume that this thing is going through some kind of slow roll inflation, I could expand to do a low velocity expansion, and I get basically the theory that can give me inflation. Here it goes, where this will end up at, this will become at the end of the day, the slow roll potential, which is Coulombic, by the way. All right, okay. So this is basically a description of a D3 brain moving now in, so we're gonna consider two cases. One case is the case where you have a warp background, and the other case where you don't have a warp background. So in the original brain anti-brain inflationary scenario in the earlier days, meaning 3 years ago, the warping wasn't considered. And what you found was an inconsistency, because even though you couldn't get you can get slow roll inflation, it turns out that if you calculate the epsilon and the eta parameter have to be less than one, one of them was inconsistent, meaning that if you calculate eta is less than one, it tells you that the separation of the two brains, that distance has to be larger than the internal volume direction. And that's an inconsistency. So at that level, that scenario was shown to be wrong or incomplete. And then KKLT, KKLMT used some of the technology developed by these individuals, most of which are here, in the context of flux stabilization by turning on a three-form flux. This warped the background, and that warping, so this is supposed to be eta nu, and I have a typo here or something that's missing. This is supposed to be this times eta old. So basically by turning on this flux associated with this three-form, this flux number, I can suppress this eta, okay, considerably just by having a warped background. And that in turn would actually satisfy the slow roll condition. But there's still a problem. And the problem is, as KKLT says, I assume everyone now knows what KKLT means. A successful string inflationary mechanism must incorporate volume stabilization, okay, of the internal dimensions. And that, again, is done by a modification from Steve and I think where you have to modify the radius of the Calabi-Yau, and that includes now this the very same scale of field that's dictating the motion of the three brain. And what you find is when you compute the Kähler potential now, basically when you have to put in the metricon moduli space now to the three brain action, you find that this potential contributes to the mass of this inflaton field and gives it a mass of Planck, okay, a Planck scale mass, which then renders the mechanism, again, inconsistent or problematic. So I'm not going to spend much more time on that, just to say that that's one, certainly one direction one can take. Yes?
I'm going to go backtrack with you. You said that for KPLT, there were these large dimensions, not very unwarped.
Yeah.
Is it clear they don't work? It's not that the dimension is large, it's that the distance between the D brains is larger than the dimension. Unless you sit right with the local maximum.
Right. So where do you go from here? Well, you can basically, the reason why this happens is because the Kähler potential is the thing that changes the story. So just, well, deal with D-term inflation. And so people like Renata Kalash and company have been thinking about this, and this is certainly a good direction to go in. But the direction that I'm going to go in is to evade all these issues and just evade slow roll inflation. We have other ways of getting inflation. And motivated by actually this evasion, okay, is to ask the question, what are the general initial conditions for D-brain inflation? What is the initial data? How do you think about that? Okay. And the question is, because at the end of the day, I'm still going to deal with D-brain, anti-D-brain. So that's the constant here. So why is D-brain, anti-D-brain interaction giving us inflation? Well, in 1999, when I was at TASI 99, I took a course with Clifford Johnson, and I was a stupid graduate student. I said, can you get inflation from D-brains? And he didn't say, well, you stupid kid, you know, go off. And he said, well, work it out. So I have the solution to your homework problem. After 5 years later, whatever, it's too late, right? You can't fail me now, okay. So the lesson here is instability is not necessarily a bad thing. The key physics for inflation is the same. Consider the annihilation of two D brains. Well, when D brains annihilate, the lesson we've learned from Sen is that they annihilate due to a tachyonic instability, an open string tachyonic instability. Well, inflation, you can think of it as some sort of instability, not properly defined, of course. It's more like an attractor, but towards superluminal expansion. And the idea here is to tie these two things together. All right? So the idea is that the initial conditions for inflation is met by connecting these two instabilities. And what is the connection? The connection is, I'm sorry. I need a soundtrack or something. Okay. It's his fault. The different outlook is topological. It's to use the idea of topology in string configuration space. So use this idea of topology. And the main point, physics, is that topological defects trap force vacuum energy in their core. And at the end of the day, it's force vacuum energy that's the thing that gives rise to negative pressure. Okay? From the Friedman equation, if the core radius is comparable to the Hubble radius, you naturally get inflation, okay? Because the field configuration is constant there, potential is constant there. So let's give an example in the context of simple field theory. So here's a scalar field, one component scalar field. It enjoys a Z2 symmetry, and it emits topologically stable walls. So here's a nice domain wall. My first lesson in field theory. And if you plug this back in here and balance the potential and kinetic energy, you can solve for the radius of the core. And here's a solution in terms of the symmetry breaking scale and the potential. Okay. So what's the mechanism? Watch this. So the mechanism now is that I have a D5 brain, an anti-D5 brain, and I'm going to explain to you pretty soon that a co-dimension 2 vortex, all right, whose score is basically 3 spatial dimensions, which at the end of the day is going to become our space-time, forms out of the tachyon field, the complex tachyon field, living on the world volume of the 5 brain. And the mechanism basically is that you get an inflating vortex. Okay. So the story here is that when a D5, anti-D5, I should put a line up here, annihilate, a co-dimension 2 tachyonic vortex forms on the D5 world volume. And this is just due to one of sense conjecture that the tension of the two D5s is compensated by the false vacuum energy. So this vortex is nothing more, since it's co-dimension 2, and since it's in the context of type 2B string theory, nothing more than a D3 brain. And the way it just happens is that if I have two D5 brains separated from one another, its world volume theory is U1 cross U1. And that thing, since the 5 brains annihilate, that U1 breaks to a U1. And this U1 is inert. Okay? Basically, that means that the vacuum manifold, G over H, just becomes Z. Pi 1 of that is Z. So therefore, co-dimension 1 objects or defects, in other words, vortices, are topologically stable, and they can assume integer winding. Okay? So how does it work? Well, let's go back to the picture. Now I have the equation for the core of the defect, and I have the condition for inflation that from the first Friedman equation that H squared has, if this is constant, and I can basically get inflation that way. So just by putting these two independent conditions together, I can solve for the Hubble radius in terms of the field theory parameter. And that constrains, so the end of the day, the story is that if the symmetry breaking scale is on the order, then M Planck, I will get topological inflation. Well, we know this is problematic in the context of four-dimensional field theory. So it's a problematic for field theory, but it works as string theory. And here's how it works. Well, if the core of the 3-brain vortex is comparable to Hubble, and all it requires is that the potential energy in the core is larger than the tension energy, okay, we can show that the string, you can simultaneously have a weak string coupling and satisfy this condition. So here's how it works. Now, I have a 6-dimensional Planck in terms of alpha prime and the string coupling. Now, this is some internal 4-dimensional volume, which I don't know anything about its properties. I don't even know if it's, I assume that it's stabilized. Okay, so I haven't solved that problem yet. Maybe not ever. Okay, and the condition for topological inflation is this, which we calculated earlier. Now let's use a level 2 truncated open string tachyon potential. It's given to us by Wally Taylor. Okay, so this is just some function of alpha prime, and it reduces to basically alpha prime at weak string coupling. All right, and when you put this all together, you find that you can get topological inflation if alpha prime is less than M Planck square, or in other words, weak string coupling.
Isn't the tachyon on the D5 brain or on the D3 brain?
On the D5. Good. That's going to become very relevant at the end.
I'm trying to get the picture. So there's the D5 and the D5 bar. They annihilate and leave behind the D3. When does the inflation occur? Before the annihilation or after?
After. After the once the vortex forms.
So the D5s are gone and the D3 is.
Yeah.
That's going to go away too. At the end of the day, I mean.
The D3.
The D3.
Yeah. No. That's part of the problem. So that's going to be a problem.
But this thing is still supposed to be considered like relative to the.
Absolutely. Yeah. So let me just go through a quick effective field theory calculation. So I assume my total action is a combination of the gravity part, the effective five brain wall volume action, and the Wessel-Meno terms. And so the Wessel-Meno term is just generalized to this. And by this I mean the supertrace, which if I now have a U1 cross U1 matrix is just this action. And immediately you find that you get a coupling of the Riemann-Riemann form for the three brain to the tachyon. When you actually integrate this out for, say, unit winding number, this just becomes a tension of the D3 brain coupled to C4. And here's the energy momentum tensor. And F minus corresponds to the gauge field of one of the A1s, one of the U1s. I also have F plus, but that's inert. Okay? And here's the equation of motion for F minus. Now I have a tachyon configuration, all right, a vortex configuration. So here's its radial component as it spans the extra two dimensions in a five-brain whirl volume. All right? And this is winding number. And here's a gauge field configuration for A minus.
I'm trying to remember what topological inflation is. Is this this thing where you form a local defect and it grows?
Yeah.
Okay, so this defect, I was picturing a D5 and D5 bar in a space-filling D3 brain. That's not right.
No.
So it's some kind of local defect on the D5.
Yeah.
The core can inflate.
Yeah.
What's the thickness of the core initially as compared to the string scale?
It's big. It's big, yes.
By what? Some power of G string?
Well, there's an N that shows up in it, correspond to the winding of the thing.
Okay.
So N has to be large.
Oh, N has to be large. Okay, so for N equals 1, it's not.
Yeah.
Why is this different than say what the KK and P do, you know? Does the brain
have
a cosmological constant?
That's right. So basically, the difference there is that you're right. So the difference there is the
non-uniform expansion.
Right, because in this case, I'll get inflation in the full five dimension as well. If I don't, there'll be a parameter that I tune that will be relevant to cosmic strings in our world that Yeah.
So which means that it's only a three-dimensional.
It's a three-dimensional inflation, but if you notice, let me go through the method solution, and then, I mean, you know, so here's the full five-dimensional metric, okay? So I'm using Birkhoff's theorem here. So I have a harmonic function for the three spatial dimensions, which will be our world, and I have one for the radial directions in the five brain world volume. Okay? Now, I go back and I have my field equations for everything, for the tachyon field, for F.
Which come from where?
Yes, that's the open string.
What have you done to the kinetic terms? Higher order dimension.
Oh, I suppress it.
This is
lowest. I'm looking at alpha prime. So the condition for topological inflation is that I'm dominated by potential energy and that it's constant at t is equal to zero. So plug it into the field equation. Well, it's not plug it in, but from, and what you find is the following solution for A, B, and C, that this is constant. So if this is exponential of time, e to the ht, then I have the sit of 6. And you can show, and I did this years ago numerically, that if you turn on this gauge field, then this solution interpolates between the sit of 6 and the sit of 4 across R2. All right, now this is related to, Harvey told me, to a paper, some work that Salam and Strat, I mean, it's not the sitter, but
it looks a bit like the Salam solution
for six dimensional. So that, you know, that's interesting. But in that case, it was Minkowski, six dimensional Minkowski. But basically, if you turn on a U1 gauge field, you can actually compactify a six dimensional manifold to a 4 across S2. So this is the solution, and I've made my assumptions. I'm not claiming that this is, it was just an exercise, that this is a string realization of inflation. But so what is the role of cosmic strings now? The point here is that I have a six-dimensional de Sitter space. And if I have a cosmic string living here, remember there was an inert U1. But actually that inert U1, if I turn it on, I can actually have cosmic strings, all right?
I'm sorry, I got a little lost.
So, flux.
Before you had this configuration of the tachyon giving rise to the vortex, and I thought the idea was that the three-dimensional sort of vortex would expand.
Yes.
That would give you a four-dimensional de Sitter.
Yes.
So where does a six-dimensional de Sitter come from?
Thank you.
Because the tachyon still has a profile into the extra two dimensions.
And that's enough to cause that to inflate also?
Yes, because what happens is it becomes a global defect. And if you turn off the gauge field, it becomes a global defect, right?
Think about. This is one of those things where it doesn't fall off fast enough.
That's right. That's right. So you need, the story here is that you actually need something like one-dimensional fluxes living in the three, in the, you know, a defect within a defect. So in other words, and of course, we see where that comes from. We can have things like, we can have things like that, right? So
Stefan, in your formulas on the previous slide, there was a non-zero AU. So have you set that equal to zero by fiat in the solution, or what?
To display this solution exactly, I can do that. But if I set this equal to zero, I find this solution exactly.
Okay, and that's the solution which goes to six dimensionals.
Right, and but if you go numerically now on this thing, and you turn this on, you turn this configuration on, you get this.
So you do get DS4, correct?
Yeah.
You get the usual.
Okay, but going back to Joe's question, did I spell this correctly? trying to be fancy, yeah. But defect inflation is topological, so inflation lasts forever. And that's not phenomenological. It doesn't fit into the landscape. sorry. So the idea here is to revisit the whole picture. If I have an embedded defect, you know, like these pion strings or Z2 strings in electroweak theory. If you have an embedded vortex, so by taking an orientable projection of type 2b, I go to type 1.
Wait, I'm sorry, I'm confused. I thought the point of topological inflation was that there are some geodesics where it lasts forever, but any one person will find that it ends at some point, and you're typically very far away from the place where it's still going on.
Yeah, but that's more in the context of chaotic inflation, right?
No. I thought that was exactly what happened with topological. You get pushed from the center of the defect.
That's right. Yeah.
I guess this isn't working anyway, so.
Okay. All right. So
So the idea is actually, if I lift the symmetry on the world volume from a U1 to something like SU2, basically by going to type 1, so I take an oriented flow projection, the world volume theory of the D5D5 goes from U1 cross U1 to SU2 cross SU2. And if that happens, that means pi 1 of this vacuum manifold, so in other words, when the D5s annihilate in type 1 string theory, it goes to this, and its vacuum manifold is basically topologically three-sphere. Therefore, no vortices are topologically stable. So basically, I get an embedded or an unstable vortex. And you can understand that from type 1 string theory because D3 brains are unstable. So five brains annihilate, and you form unstable three brains. But they're too unstable. As soon as they form, they go away. So what do you do there? Well, we play a little trick that we play in electric weak theory, which is, so anyway, the story is, what you want is to use that, say that this thing lasts for a finite time, you get enough inflation, and at some point it unwinds and inflation ends. And how you do this is by stabilizing, use the other SU2, have it in a thermal bath out of equilibrium with the vortex, okay? And the energy from that plasma will actually stabilize, basically it will stabilize this defect. And this is how it works. So let's take this tachyon field, it's SU2 cross SU2, and let's take a U1 subgroup of that, okay? And I'm going to have a real part and a complex part. The complex part is going to be charged with respect to one of the U1s. All right, and that's coming from the covariant derivative here. And here's this potential. Now if I actually put this, use a Hartree approximation, and I say this thing has a thermal vev, it's in thermal equilibrium, what happens is that the effective potential now becomes this. So it's as if I've given a mass to one of the charge scale fields. Okay, and what that does, basically it breaks the vacuum manifold from S3 to S1. So it looks as if this charge field is stable, topologically stable. The other way of saying it more physically is that the energy of that plasma is stabilizing the defect, okay, at some temperature higher than some critical temperature. And as soon as you get below that critical temperature, then the vortex becomes unstable, okay? And this was shown numerically by Nagasawa and Brandenburg. So the idea now is that the D5s annihilate, you have an unstable D3, then you have an open string plasma which stabilizes the D3, the inflation begins until text TC.
So the plasma is just an initial condition?
Yeah, the plasma is an initial condition. I can, you know, I'm free to turn it, usually what people do, they turn it off. So I said, let me turn it on and put in some kind of thermal bath. Then at some temperature, the inflation begins, and until it hits, as inflation begins, that temperature dilutes, okay? It goes like 1/8 to the 4th, okay? When that happens, the vortex unwinds and inflation ends, okay? Now, you can show by simple calculation that if this critical temperature is the temperature of recombination, and inflation is 10 to the 17 JeV, you actually get exactly 62 E-foldons, okay? Yes?
So there's one scalar that means that you only appear in primary temperature and the other one is stable up in primary temperature?
That's right.
So there should be some mass hierarchy between the two.
That's right. I haven't explained it. Mm-hmm. Okay. Thanks. So for such small E-foldings, 62, okay, what you find is that the physical wavelength of co-moving scales, which correspond to present-day cosmological scales, is larger than Planck's length. So you have no trans-Planckian problem in this mechanism, okay? So I don't know how I'm doing with time. So So basically, I just want to end up saying that, we've shown that it's possible to get a consistent deep brain inflationary scenario, okay, via topological inflation. Okay. However, there are some assumptions made here. So I made this assumption that I have a six-dimensional gravity theory, and I assume that the moduli stabilize. Now, this is an educated guess, and the reason why it has to do with a discussion I had with some people about whether or not, so this is one thing that I don't have an answer to, which is whether or not, in the context of this hypothetical six-dimensional supergravity theory, whether or not this potential will have any contribution, give any contributions to the Kale potential. Okay, so I don't know the answer to that. And if it doesn't, it only contributes to something like a D term, like a Phi Heliopolis term, then I think, you know, I'm safe here. But does a moduli stabilization mechanism exist for such compactification? I don't know. And another thing that I found interesting is that now there's another role for these cosmic strings, or fluxes, line fluxes, which is that they seem to be robust because in type 1, homotopy does, since you have S3, well, pi 3 of S3 is Z, and this does correspond to codimension 4 objects in 5 dimensions, and that is a D1 string. So they are stable in this scenario as well, and they also seem to play a role in this relationship between the 6D and 4-dimensional inflation. So there's some dynamics there. So I think that's it. Yeah. Okay. Thank you.